This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Of the TJ and Todd's podcast, or TJ and Todd's tailgate. It's been so long that I forgot what the name of this damn show was. If I sound a little echoey, we are in the new studio office recording today with, as always, Todd on the phone. Todd, you're back, and in your absence, I guess we'll start out here. The Final Four, Ohio State jumps in, and the three other teams with Oregon, Florida State, and Alabama. Are we surprised? Are we not surprised? Or are we kind of both?
I'm not surprised. I think we had said many times on the podcast before, we figured Ohio State would make their way into the playoff picture somehow. They need a little help, and luckily that, you know, that help came in the form of the Big 12's ineptitude.
Yeah.
For those of our listeners that are outside of Big 12 country, the Big 12 and their head guy, Mr. Bowlesby, I think Bob Bowlesby, or I forget his first name, but you know, they have been championing the idea all season of hashtag one true champion. And the obvious problem is they don't have a championship game after losing Missouri, Nebraska, and Colorado, and Texas A&M. They're at 10 teams right now. So the issue became in the last week of the season, both Baylor and TCU, both excellent teams this year that I think I would have loved to have seen Baylor get a playoff spot over Ohio State or Florida State, but I get why they didn't. And great soundbite by Art Briles, by the way, kind of calling the Big 12 out for their negligence and supporting either TCU or Baylor. But TCU and Baylor finished the season essentially tied, co-champions of the Big 12. There's no game to settle the score.
Nope.
So Ohio State kind of walks in with their huge alumni base, their huge brand name over, you know, little old Baylor and TCU didn't have a chance without the Big 12 sticking up for them. So congrats to Ohio State. I think they're a great team. I think they made a great, statement in that pretty dominant win last game of the season. Really, they rebounded from an awful Virginia Tech loss. I hated to see the injury to JT Barrett because he was kind of having a Heisman caliber season there towards the end. But, you know, hey, that's the rules. That's the way it goes. The Big 12, Baylor, TCU have nobody to blame but themselves.
Right, exactly. And the committee, though, did they paint themselves in a corner coming out before the week before all the conference title games? Happening, putting TCU at number three, because if they put them at number five, is there still the same public outrage as there was after the final poll was released last Sunday?
Yeah, they painted themselves in the corner, and I think those are the kind of growing pains I know I expected going to this Final Four, because it's kind of like the NCAA tournament. You know, you've got 60-something teams, 62, field of 64 now,
yeah,
in the basketball. It's, you know, number 65 is always the first one that says, well, look at what we did to make it. I mean, there's more great teams this year than four, the top four. I mean, Baylor is an outstanding team. TCU is an outstanding team. They have legitimate gripes and issues with being left out of the Final Four playoff spots, but there's only four spots. So you know that number five team, assuming that everyone isn't going undefeated, which is what happened this year, you've got a lot of one and two lost teams that are all knocking on the door. I mean, what about Mississippi State? You know, they kind of had a thud in their season, but I think they've got just a legitimate argument if Baylor and TCU can kind of, bitch a little bit. But I think they got it as right as they could in the confines of being able to only pick four teams. I think we're going to cover 18 playoffs eventually. I don't know if that's 5 or 10 years from now, or, you know, a couple decades from now, but eventually it'll be 8 teams. As long as it's 4, I think that you can't really complain this year with how it ended up. Like I just said, you know, the only people TCU and Baylor have to blame is the front office of the Big 12. I feel bad for them. They did everything they could on the field. They're two outstanding teams. I mean, TCU and Gary Patterson are one of the best turnaround stories in the nation this year. You know, I hate the way it is because, you know, they're kind of a underdog. They're both underdog teams, small schools. You know, TCU is like probably the 5th most popular college football team in Texas. You know, Baylor, Baylor's down there too. You know, the only thing people know about Baylor is RG3 and the murder cover-up a couple years ago in the early 2000s. So,
yeah, no kidding.
I feel bad. Anytime that there's an odd man out in this 4-team scenario, the Big 12 is going to be that odd man out, assuming, you know, a team like Oklahoma or Texas isn't undefeated.
You know, like you just said, Texas and Oklahoma, adding 2 more teams to get 12 in the Big 12, isn't it going to dilute the conference if they add, say, an SMU or a Houston or New Mexico or New Mexico State? Or do they need to go out and try to lure an independent in like a BYU or Notre Dame?
Well, I think Notre Dame is a pipe dream. I don't know if Notre Dame will ever truly join the conference. I know they've got that deal with the ACC in some of their sports, but I think that they're a Big Ten team before they're ever a Big 12 team. And I think that, I mean, I'm jaded and I'm biased just because of the, you know, the way that Missouri was handled in the Big 12. But I'm very familiar with the Big 12, especially Big 12 football, you know, being a Missouri fan for many years, rooting for Mizzou in the Big 12. I think they really screwed the pooch by not getting Louisville a couple of years ago when they had the chance. I think Louisville would have been a great addition, maybe a school in Florida or along the East Coast. Because once you add West Virginia to the Big 12, you kind of throw in the whole, you know, geography thing out the window.
Yeah, no kidding.
At that point, you're asking, what are some solid programs that can help raise our competitive, you know, stock as a conference? And what are some TV markets that we can lure in that broaden our footprint? That was the big thing they lost losing Missouri and Texas A&M was Kansas City market, also shared by Nebraska. And then all of the money and viewers that Texas A&M brought to that league along with Texas. So I really think Louisville was a great shot that they could have, you know, taken a couple of years ago. And I also think that maybe a school like Cincinnati could have been all right in the Big 12. I think BYU is a great program for the Big 12. But, yeah, I agree. If you're just adding New Mexico or anybody that'll you know, or here's another one. What about Colorado State? I mean, losing Colorado is actually great for the Big 12 because Colorado is just a dumpster fire. So you could add maybe their, you know, their better little brother, Colorado State. But, they missed the boat on expansion, but they're going to have to make something work soon because as long as they don't have that title game and a team doesn't go undefeated in the Big 12, I think they're always going to be left out, them or the ACC, when it comes to the pecking order of the Pac-12, SEC, and Big 10.
Can we go back to 2010 and blame Texas for the situation that we're in right now? Because it seems like if Texas doesn't go and make the Longhorn Network and turn it into the behemoth that it is, maybe it doesn't push out Missouri, push out Nebraska, A&M, and Colorado, which keeps the Big 12 intact and keeps them, you know, having the playoff that they had the 1 year in Dallas in the Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah, I think Texas is entirely to blame, but I also think that Texas has the least to lose from all of this conference realignment because when the Big 12 inevitably crumbles or, you know, self-destructs, Texas is going to be just fine.
Well, of
course. The Longhorn Network was coming to, you know, proved to be a colossal mistake. It's a network that nobody, you know, hardly in Texas even has or watches. Even as an SEC guy, you know, I wasn't really throwing my hands up in the air for the SEC network because you're getting the worst game each week. So if you've got the Longhorn Network, you're not getting the Red River rivalry. You're not getting, you know, the marquee games. You're getting Texas versus UTEP.
You're getting Texas
women's volleyball. You're getting Texas, you know, baseball on a Wednesday night. It's not ESPN or, you know, anything like it. So I knew there was going to be issues with that from the start. But really, yeah, Texas drives the ship. And you saw in 2010 and the subsequent years after that where Missouri and Nebraska were both courted by the Big Ten. You also saw Oklahoma State rumors to the Pac-12. You saw Texas rumors to the Pac-12.
That's right.
But ultimately, you know, I think Texas knows that the Big 12, as it stands right now, outside of Oklahoma, eats out of the palm of their hand. Because the minute the Big 12 crumbles, you cannot convince me that schools like Iowa State, Kansas, Texas Tech, Oklahoma State are going to be fielding offers left and right for Power 5 conferences. I think Oklahoma State has to go with Oklahoma, wherever Oklahoma goes. I actually believe that's like in their state charter or something like that.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, Kansas has a horrible football program, which is what drives the ship. I'm not slighting, you know, Kansas is one of the best basketball programs of all time, but that's not what the ACC or the Big 12 or the Big 10 is looking for when they're wanting to add another member. They're looking for TV sets and they're looking for football. Iowa State, I mean, you know, there's enough said about Iowa State. Baylor, you know, Baylor was on their hands and knees begging for the Big 12 to stay. You know, they were one of the key benefactors and one of the key actors keeping the Big 12 alive. So, yeah, Texas is entirely to blame, but I think they're also incredibly arrogant and they're incredibly flippant in how they teach or how they approach keeping the Big 12 alive because they know it's basically their, you know, they're calling the shots. Either way, in the minute the Big 12 is nuked and, you know, is absorbed by the Mountain West or the All-American Conference or whoever, you know, Texas will be just fine. I mean, Texas could probably make more money as an independent than being in the Big 12.
You know, I was thinking of that, making just the Texas Conference, because basically if they would become independent, they would become a Texas Conference. But if they would keep the Big 12 together, adding Notre Dame, adding BYU, and BYU has their own network, Notre Dame has that sweetheart deal they have with NBC, maybe, you know, Texas, they can convince the Big 12 that, hey, this is going to be good for our conference to add these two other independents and thus making them 14 teams or 12 teams. What do you think of that one with, you know, the Longhorn Network being already in there and the Big 12 already with a revenue sharing with a team with its own network already in place?
I think any conference in the nation outside of maybe the SEC, just because of the geographic and cultural differences, would welcome Notre Dame with open arms for the reason you said. I mean, they're arguably the biggest football program in the nation. They've got a huge national fan presence. They've got a really just unfair deal with NBC. That's, you know, basically all of their games are unopposed on NBC.
Right.
But I think that if Notre Dame was to have joined a Power 5 conference, we would have seen it happen by now. And I really think that Texas doesn't stand much to gain in their own right by Notre Dame joining the Big 12. I think it obviously makes the league a stronger football league. But again, if you're Texas and you run through either the Big 12 as we know it now or whatever the next version of the Big 12 will look like, and you run through it undefeated, you're the Texas Longhorns. You're in the playoffs. Just, you know, I think that's just, and it's the same, really, it's the same with Oklahoma, which is what was so frustrating about the job the Sooners did this year, is that those two programs, if they're sitting right now undefeated, you know, one or both of them is in the playoffs. And I think Texas knows that as well. So making the league stronger is not as important for Texas as it is for Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Kansas State, Baylor, TCU, those other schools that needed that one extra resume win.
Right.
Because a win for TCU or Baylor this year over a 9-win Nebraska team or a 10-win Missouri team would look pretty nice, you know, this last week when they're making the playoff decisions.
Right. And I was looking at Notre Dame's future schedule here. They do have the Longhorns coming up, next season and 2016, but aside from that, my God, does it turn into an ACC-heavy schedule. I mean, for example, 2018, it's Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Pittsburgh, Florida State, Wake Forest. And, you know, in 2019, Louisville, Virginia, Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, Duke, BC. I mean, that's basically an ACC conference schedule. It's I mean, they're going to go anywhere. They might as well just make it official and go to the ACC. But so transitioning to this playoff, Alabama, they have the one seed. If they lose that title game to your Missouri Tigers, are they team four and Ohio State gets bumped up to three and Florida State two and Oregon one?
Yeah, I think there's no way. Given the last month of Alabama this year, I think there's no way they're on the outside looking in of the playoff, even with a loss to Missouri. I think that they would have been number four. The game that I think everyone wants to see, at least I know I do, is the new kid on the block, who I guess is also the old kid on the block, Florida State. Not that they're a flash in the pan. It's a great program. But I'd like to see the Jameis Winston era of Florida State go against the Saban-led Alabama team.
Right.
But, I mean, that Ohio State-Alabama matchup, one thing about being in the SEC is you'll learn pretty fast that the mortal enemy of the SEC is the Big Ten. I don't know if it's because just that the schools in the Big Ten are all, they're just the best football conference of northern schools. I think because I don't think the Big 12 really has the kind of Yankee identity that the Big Ten does, which you're talking about schools like Ohio State and Penn State. And unfortunately, like the Big East and a lot of those Northeastern conferences aren't very good at football. So the mortal enemy of the SEC fan is a fan of any Big Ten school.
Right.
So I know Ohio State fans who saw their team really rebound this year behind some great quarterback play. J.C. Barrett's out. But, they've got a dynamic offense. They got a pretty solid defense. They got Urban Meyer going, head-to-head against the SEC and Nick Saban once again. They're licking their chops, maybe hoping to repeat kind of the upset that Stoops pulled over Saban last year when Oklahoma upset Alabama. I know Alabama has the entire SEC rooting for them to just demolish Ohio State. And once again, prove A, that Ohio State doesn't belong in the playoff, and then B, that the SEC is still superior to the Big Ten. So I think that, as far as the 1-4 matchup, is about as appealing as you're going to get. I mean, that's going to be great. I think the wild card in all of this is going to be Oregon, because I think Oregon has a lot to play for. They play a very different and exciting brand of football compared to a lot of teams in the Big Ten and SEC. But, yeah, I think Alabama really punched their ticket in regardless of the SEC championship game, mostly because of the mess the Egg Bowl really hurt them.
Yeah, exactly. And, with Mississippi State, they get pushed into the bowl games, I believe. I think, who does – it's TCU, Mississippi State, or is it TCU, Mississippi in one, and then Baylor gets Arizona or – the other Mississippi. I'm confused with my bowl games here.
It is. Let's take a look here.
That would probably be a lot easier if I had that beforehand. It wouldn't have been. This is riveting radio right here of looking up who plays
TCU,
what
bowl. Yeah. TCU and Ole Miss. Okay. So that's going to be a Peach Bowl, which is going to be one of the new Big Six bowls outside of the playoff.
Right. Oh, it's Baylor-Michigan State. They get the facto runner-up in the Big Ten for that one. So, the guys over at The Extra Point, they asked me this on Sunday on their show. What's that going to look like for Baylor and TCU? And I said, I bet that they could be up, both teams could be up by 20 with 3 minutes left in the fourth quarter, and they're still pushing the tempo and pushing the ball up to try to score as many points as possible. So in your opinion, do you see those two games as TCU and Baylor's way of saying F you to the whole college football world, we're going to try to hang 90 on these teams?
Yeah, I think the great thing about what happened to TCU and Baylor, even as frustrating as I'm sure it must be for their coaches and players and their fans, is you've got a chip on your shoulder. And if you are TCU, for example, you've got a great opportunity to, throttle a very good Ole Miss team in a, Big Six, New Year's, prime, everyone's watching big deal bowl game, not the, Meineke Auto Care Bowl on a, Tuesday night in mid-December. This is going to be a real showcase for two teams that a lot of people outside of the Big 12, you know, Big 12 viewer, you know, viewership area, might not have seen. I mean, they've probably seen the gaudy numbers that TCU, you know, with Trevon Boykin and Bryce Petty at Baylor put up this year, but they haven't gotten to see them, you know, in person or on TV. And now's going to be their chance. And what better way, if you are TCU, than to take down a top 15 SEC team? And then if you're Baylor, you know, you're going to get one of the kind of darlings out of the Big Ten that was kind of vying for a playoff spot at one point this year. So there's still plenty to play for. And I think if you are a coach of either of those programs, that's what you want in your bowl game. You don't want Louisiana Tech in a bowl nobody's going to care about, watch, or travel to. This is a great opportunity for both teams. And I think you're right. If you've watched either of them this year, they don't win a lot of games 23-20 or 30-25. It's going to be they're going to either, you know, they might lose, but like we said on this podcast before, with these Big 12 teams, it's like the one part of the college football landscape where TCU could put up 60 against Ole Miss and still lose.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, exactly. Exactly on that one. It's funny. You know, I was watching the other night here in Austin, just flipping around channels, and on ESPN Classic or U or whatever it was, they had the replay of the first 30 for 30 for the Miami Hurricanes team, the U. And that national title game they played against Nebraska, it was in the Orange Bowl. Miami, I think, was 1 or 2. And they played Nebraska, who was ranked 11th at the time. And Nebraska was considered the home team being out of the Big 8. So how in the hell are we still complaining about how teams get in when it was 1 through 4, when number 11 was playing in the national title game?
It gives us something to talk about. It gives ESPN something to talk about for a 24-hour news cycle. Really, you know, once I think they got the top 4 teams right, but really, if you look in the top 10 this year in that final poll that's going to come out after these bowl games, you're going to see a lot of very good teams. And I think, like we've said, you know, all show, TCU and Baylor, if they would have gotten, one of them would have gotten that fourth spot, would it have really been a, you know, travesty against mankind? I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's just, there's too many teams and not enough spots. It's not unique to college football, but I guess the good thing we can say about college football is, unlike college basketball or some professional sports like the NBA or NHL, you know, half of college football is not in the playoffs.
So. Yeah, exactly. That's a great point right there. It's only baseball.
I'd rather it be too hard to get a spot than, you know, too easy.
Yeah, no, I can. That's an excellent point right there. Bringing that up, no one has thought at that point. You know, in the NBA, it's the top 8, and at least the best of 7. Or hell, the NFL, you know, 6 out of, I'm trying to think how many people are in the conference. But at least that is a one game sample size. So if you are the Patriots and you're playing the Chiefs at home, and Alex Smith goes 18-20 for 200 yards, but your defense shuts down Brady, and you guys lose, your season looks horrible. At least here, it's top 4, and these teams coming in have had a great year. So before we go to Heisman talk here, you know, the guys over Extra Point, they asked me my opinions of the Final Four. I said Florida State and Bama are going to go through to the title game. So I ask you this here, Todd, Oregon, Florida State, what's your feelings for that? And then Bama, Ohio State, you know, who makes it out alive of the first two games to play in the, you know, the first ever title game in Dallas?
My gut feeling, number 1, Alabama versus number 4, Ohio State. I think Ohio State gives Alabama a game for one half before Alabama is just too much for Ohio State to handle. I don't think it'll be a complete embarrassment, but I see a 10-15 point win, maybe 2 touchdown win for Alabama
right. In
that game. The game I think that will be a classic is Oregon versus Florida State. I mean, when I look at those two offenses and just the speed and athleticism that's going to be on that field when those two teams play, I mean, that's going to be like playing a video game. That is going to be, those are two outstanding teams. Don't get me wrong, you know, they're not gimmicks, they're not, you know, smoke and mirrors, but that is going to be a fun one to watch. And I'm going to pick in that game Oregon, going off of the theme that Jameis Winston snubbed for the Heisman. They've been this close this year. You know, they've been that one play away seems like five times this year from dropping one. And Oregon will be the best team they've played all year. I think that Oregon is going to take that game, and we're going to see Alabama versus Oregon. And in that case, I'm going to take Alabama. I'll take Alabama by 10 against Oregon as your national champion.
See, this is where I disagree. I think Florida State has been like a poker player this entire season. You know, they've been slow playing everybody. They've been checking when people have checked as well, even though they're sitting on pocket aces. They've been just, you know, calling, no raises. And that final hand, which is going to be against Oregon before they go on and play Alabama, they're just going to completely come out and just hit them, and no one's going to expect it. No one's going to expect them to flip over their cards and to have the winning hand in this game. And if you notice, Florida State, they've been waiting for teams to make mistakes in their game. So this is the first team, like you said, that's been the best one they're going to play. And I think from start to finish, James is going to show what he showed us against Georgia Tech in the ACC title game, that he is the best college quarterback out there. And, you know, we'll take down Oregon by, you know, I'll say by eight, not by double digits, but enough to where the result will be well in hand midway through the fourth.
The game, that's the game I want to see. I want to see Florida State and Jameis Winston versus the SEC, you know, Goliath that is Alabama and Nick Saban. I think that this is going to be the time. It's so hard in college football to go back-to-back.
Right.
And there's so many intangibles and things going against you. Just like, you know, Jameis Winston found out how hard it is, like Johnny Manziel before him, to go back-to-back with the Heisman Trophy. It's just, there's so many things that are going against your odds and going against your favor that I think this is a time where we see Florida State stumble, not fall. They still got the ACC to tear apart next year. Although if I'm Florida State, I'm slowly starting to get worried about, you know, Georgia Tech kind of resurging, and you know, Miami will be back at some point. But for now, you know, they've still got a weak conference to beat up on. So this isn't going to be the end of their run. But I think Oregon is going to be the best shot to dethrone Florida State this year. And there's just something that tells me, you know, just watching Florida State, like, you could be right. You could be 100% correct that this is just, you know, college kids not really putting things into perspective and going out there 110% each week, because, you know, you're only kidding yourself if you think any player can physically give 110% each game of the year against, you know, SEMO or Southeastern Louisiana and, you know, Florida State. You know, they know their players. They know how much, you know, they know how much effort will beat, you know, Texas State or North Texas. They know how much effort will beat Florida State and Oregon.
Right.
But I've just seen enough, you know, enough weaknesses and enough things that, you know, you can exploit, because Georgia Tech is a good team, but they had Florida State on the ropes. North Carolina State, not a good team. They had Florida State on the ropes. I mean, there's just been too many times where I've seen Florida State sleepwalking. And really, this is, you know, Jameis Winston has shown he's a mortal man this year. I mean, he's had a good year, but he's turned the ball over a lot more than he did last year. His final QBR, when you look at him compared to, like, Marcus Mariota, who will be seen on the other side of the field.
Mm-hmm.
I think I disagree that Jameis Winston – I think Jameis Winston is the most talented quarterback in all of college football, and I think that he could be a great pro quarterback. But I think there's no question that this year Marcus Mariota – into the season as the best quarterback in America.
Yeah, statistically speaking, with his 52 or 53 combined touchdowns, you are correct there. Maybe I'm just thinking just outside of this year, when he goes to the pros next year, where Jameis has the body, the mechanics, and the ability to evade pass pressures like a Roethlisberger does for the Steelers. And that's what I'm thinking. He's going to come out as the best one we see. But with the Heisman, we'll translate into this, or we'll transfer and segue into, you know, what's coming up this Saturday with the Heisman Trophy. Mariota, he's going to run away with this title on a landslide, correct?
Yeah, I hate when there's only three finalists.
True.
I think just, I don't know what it is. I think there should be four. Just to me, it looks better on TV. I know it's not a big deal, because usually you know who's one and two when you go into this weekend.
Right.
And like last year, we knew it was going to be either Jameis Winston or Johnny Manziel.
Right.
Everyone else is just there to be along for the ride. Yeah, there's no way Marcus Mariota does not win the Heisman this year. But that doesn't mean that, you know, Amari Cooper, for a wide receiver at Alabama to put up those kind of numbers, you know, set all those SEC records as a wide receiver in a very power running, slow, pro style offense. You know, this isn't the Big 12 where you're slinging the ball 60, 70 times a game. That was a tremendous season by Amari Cooper.
Right.
Melvin Watkins at Wisconsin. I'm starting to feel like you can put anybody, you can put me behind Wisconsin's offensive line and I could put up 2,000 yards. I mean, what they've done in the last 5 years is just like ungodly with their running backs. Because if you remember, Monty Ball before him was another Big Ten record setter, and I believe a 2,000 yard rusher and the single season touchdown record holder.
Right.
Just an awesome season by Melvin Watkins, and really that's like the classic Big Ten team right there. You know, running it straight up the middle. You know, very athletic, fast running back. I think he had an outstanding season. It's a shame that that record only lasted a week. I don't think we'll ever hear the guy from Oklahoma again. But
right.
I hate that, you know, Mariota is head and shoulders above those guys, because if you're a fan of any of those teams, you're probably just, you know, doing everything you can. It kind of reminds me when I was in college and Chase Daniel got invited to New York alongside, I know Sam Bradford. I believe it was Sam Bradford, Colt McCoy, and Tim Tebow that year. I might be wrong on Colt McCoy, but I know for sure it was Tebow and Bradford. But I think Sam Bradford ended up winning the Heisman. And
McCoy would have been there at the time.
Happy. What's that?
McCoy wouldn't have been there at the time. That was his, you know, one of his probably his junior year. I think junior was the year that Bradford and Tebow were about to head off to the NFL.
Yeah, and I remember Chase Daniel, you know, getting a Heisman finalist invite there to the ceremony in New York, and you're just hoping against hope that all the votes between the bigger names would dilute themselves and your guy has a shot. I don't think that will happen this year for Melvin Watkins or Amari Cooper, but, you know, great seasons by them. I think that there's a couple of other names I might have would have liked to have seen there. What about the running back, was it Tevin Coleman from Indiana?
Oh, yeah.
Also a 2,000-yard rusher. That would have been awesome. What about a defensive player, Scooby Wright from Arizona?
Right. You won a bunch of awards.
Defensive player of the year. You know, I'm not against maybe just for formality's sake making that Heisman finalist ballot kind of more diverse as far as position. We know a quarterback's probably going to win. If the quarterback doesn't win, it's going to be a running back. You know,
right.
Let's at least get it. Maybe let's at least invite a defensive player to be on the ballot. Or, you know, more wide receivers, or, you know, somebody else decides just a quarterback and running back. But, yeah, there's no way Mariota would pick this one.
Yeah, it's like when they invited Teo, two years ago, whenever it was him, Klein, and Manziel up for the Heisman. It's, we felt like they invited him because he played on Notre Dame, was the captain of the defense, and was on undefeated Notre Dame team that played a lot of close games, but you really didn't feel like he had a legit chance against Manziel and the sexiness that he was showing at A&M on the field, not the sexiness through his Instagram feed or his Twitter account, although those pictures are very sexy of who you'd hang out with during his college years.
Now, the girlfriend stuff, did that break before or after the Heisman?
Before. It was like the week before, I think it was.
Okay, well, now is probably the biggest reason why Teo, you could write him off before that ever happened. That's still one of the weirdest stories I've ever.
But aren't the votes collected at least 2 weeks beforehand? Before that one, I think the votes were already in before they went to the presentation for that. When the story came out, I think the votes were already cast in. Who's getting it?
There's almost like a linebacker is. On the defensive side of the ball, I think if you're ever going to get invited, you got to be positioned like linebacker,
cornerback,
safety, cornerback, defensive end. There's got to be a position where you can get a lot of numbers, a lot of singular numbers that show how good you are on your own in isolation. And a big thing that year with Teo was how great of a captain he was and what kind of, the impact he had on the morale and energy of that Notre Dame defense. I mean, he was an All-American caliber linebacker for sure, but Yeah, a big part of that was the dreaded intangibles thing, where it's like if they run out of things to say about you on the field, they bring up all the stuff that, he's really scrappy, or he really gets them, revved up, and he's such a great leader, and it's kind of they ran out of stats to throw at you. and on the other hand, in that year specifically, Manziel was just going nuts every game and had all the awesome highlights in that Alabama game, and it's just crazy. But yeah, it's a system that's not built. The Heisman specifically is not built for defensive players, because a great linebacker or the best cornerback in college football might not have hardly any interceptions if you never throw to him. But he could be the most talented player in all of college football as a cornerback, and you never hear his name on TV because the quarterback never looks at him. Same with the linebacker. They never run in his direction. A defensive tackle, a dominant defensive tackle is one of the hardest things to find in college football, but they don't rack up in any numbers like a defensive end.
Right. Yeah, I think the last defensive... sorry, go ahead. I'll let you finish your thought.
Oh, yeah. So I think that, Payal is a great example of how hard it's going to be for a defensive player to win this thing anytime soon. It's just not built for that. But I'd still like to see another Tao, or another linebacker or defensive end, at least make the trip to New York.
Right. I think the last one to win it was Charles Woodson in 1998 or 97 or one of those late 90s years, where if you make it on ESPN because of pick sixes and being part of the return game, you will find yourself in the Heisman conversation. Let me ask you this, though. JT Barrett, I'm going to bring this up because myself and a writer friend of mine out in Indiana, Jay Graves, who runs the Jay Graves Report, does a great job over there at that website. We had a little Twitter conversation going back and forth about JT Barrett and not making it to New York for the presentation. He was for, I was against, because of the top three being so dominant. What's your thoughts on Barrett and what he did for Ohio State, and should have been enough to get him into the the room in New York on Saturday?
I think the obvious thing that hurt him was an injury late in the season. I think the poor game against Virginia Tech and kind of the slow start. I mean, he really picked it up. I believe this year he set – there's a stat I'd never heard before. I was watching Ohio State on TV a couple weeks ago. He's responsible for more touchdowns in one season than any Ohio State player ever, I believe. I've never heard that before, that they say – usually if it's a quarterback, they say, oh, he's combined for 20 rushing touchdowns and 30 pass touchdowns. And they said he's created more touchdowns or respond. I don't know if that includes handing off to the running back or anyway, the point remains, despite not having the profile of Braxton Miller or Terrell Pryor or, any of the other really big name quarterbacks that have come through Ohio State or the dozens of, all American running backs that go to that school, he's had an impact this year on that team that's really unmatched outside of that group of guys like Mariota and Trevon Boykin and that Bryce Petty, that really elite group of quarterbacks in the nation. I mean, he's right up there in the discussion. I think the slow start and the injury kept him out of New York. And I think the way that the voting process works is they actually only came to an agreement on these three guys. So it's not like they just picked. They had a long list, and they just say, well, JT Barrett finished fourth, we'll bring him to New York. I guess there's a way in the voting process where these are the three guys that they picked, and that's who comes. So I would have been against it, but I'm not losing any sleep over not being there. I think the injury, it's not fair to him that he got hurt and had to miss a couple of games where he really could have put a stamp on a season, but just the way it goes sometimes.
Right, and I think if he was a starter, had what the heck was the guy's name out in Ohio State who started the season? I can see Braxton Miller. If Miller wasn't the starter to begin the season and it was Barrett and, like you just said, the Michigan injury, if that's him putting up 55 against Wisconsin, that gets him into the room. And it wasn't like he was contending with Mariota for total touchdowns. I mean, Mariota had 52 touchdowns. Melvin Gordon had over 2,000 yards rushing. And Cooper led the whole entire nation receiving. So those three are at least legit contenders as to, hey, either one of these has an argument that they should win the Heisman. The only one I thought that should have made it in there was Boykin. Is there anyone else that you thought should have been at least considered a finalist, aside from, you know, who you just named with Scooby or, you know, the kid from Indiana?
I think Boykin is the biggest snub, because I think he is not as good at, I'm not going to say, I hate saying not as good, because, you know, a lot of these guys are very similar in talent. And then the way it works in the NFL is a guy like Joe Flacco that we had never heard of out of Delaware in college ends up being, you know, this great pro quarterback, or Colin Kaepernick even. I know he's had kind of a rough year this year, but you know, he was a great quarterback in Nevada that nobody, you know, I actually watched him a couple times at Nevada because they played in the zoo. But if you were just the average, you know, casual college football fan, you would have no idea who he was coming out of college. As opposed to someone like the, you know, bigger names that were in college at the time. But Boykin, I think he's in that same ballpark as Mariota as far as yards, the touchdown, interception ratio, the impact he had on turning around a much worse team than Oregon and leading them to a co-championship of a Power 5 conference. I don't think you can understate that. That is a much tougher job at TCU, especially considering the kind of turnover and turmoil that school has had the past couple of years than at Oregon. I think Scooby Wright, if you're going to bring in a defensive player, another guy, I mean, I am a homer. I think Shane Ray, who is an SEC Defensive Player of the Year, he could be on his way to another consensus All-American at Mizzou. This was Walter Camp All-American today. I think he could at least be in the discussion if you're not going strictly for quarterbacks. I think Coleman, once again, the running back in Indiana, had an outstanding year for a bad team. JT Barrett. I mean, I'll listen to JT Barrett being a legitimate snub, at least be invited. Because you have to go under the assumption that Mariota is winning this thing, and the rest of it is just a, you know, kind of respect for the season you put together. So, from that standpoint, I can see JT Barrett and Boykin both being a snub.
Let me ask you this here. When the ballots are revealed as to, you know, how many people got how many votes, does Jameis Winston have a one next to him first place votes because he voted for himself?
If he has a good agent right now, which I know he does, I'll take that back. I know he has an agent right now. I don't know if he has a good agent, considering the past year and a half of his life. But if he's got the right people in his ear, that will not happen. I think Jameis Winston, he's at that kind of point in his career where he can win another national title and really raise his stock going into the draft. And it's already astronomically high. I mean, he's a first-round draft pick, you know, sure thing. Something stupid like that is a kind of, you know, it's been a while since we've heard about Jameis Winston in the news. So something like that. Mm-hmm. I can only shudder to think of what ESPN would do if they can uncover Jameis Winston voting for himself over Mariota or Amari Cooper or any of the other guys.
I would love it. I would love his confidence saying, you know what, I was the best player this year in college football, and look at me. You know, I'm number one. I'm number one in everything that I do, and here, I don't care if everybody else didn't vote for me. I voted for myself because that's what I do. That's kind of like I hope that Johnny Manziel voted for himself last year. I forget if he did or not.
The championship is all that matters. So Jameis Winston can win another championship, because the thing about the Heisman Trophy is it's not like any of the other MVP awards in pro sports, because there are so many players, great players in college football, because you're talking about over 100 teams here of, you know, Division I level athletes. So you're picking the best guy who's also probably the most famous guy. Because there are so many great quarterbacks in this country. I mean, really, if you had Trevon Boykin as your starting quarterback over Marcus Mariota, are you any worse off? I would argue no.
Right.
And depending on your team, you might even be better. If you have Jameis Winston on your team over Marcus Mariota, are you any worse? No, because Jameis Winston's actually won a championship. Hmm. So it's, you know, the Heisman Trophy is just, it's a incredible honor for a college football player. But it's not the end-all, be-all. What matters is a guy like A.J. McCarron that never was going to win, you know, a Heisman Trophy in his career. But, I mean, he's got the rings. He's got the trophies. He's got the resume to say, hey, no. Like, I was really the best while you guys were on TV.
It's kind of like after the Texas's last national title in 2005 when you had Reggie Bush win the Heisman Trophy. And as the confetti's raining down. Vince Young picks up the crystal ball football after winning a national title and gives a Heisman pose as kind of like a nice FU to the voters who didn't vote for him and, you know, wanted to go Reggie instead. But, yeah, it's going to be a great close here to the season. Army and Navy this week. I guess one last prediction here for the final of the season. Army or Navy, Todd? I guess you for the National Guard. Who are you pulling for in this game?
Yeah, if people in our podcast don't know, I'm a captain in the U.S. Army.
There you go.
I'm a Mizzou alumni, so I'm a Mizzou fan, but for one game every year, everybody who's ever worn a U.S. Army uniform knows who to root for. The nation's, you know, oldest and most, you know, proudest rivalry and all the great things go on in this game. Army, as a football program, sucks. They can't recruit. They can't recruit, and it's not fair. Navy, if you've looked over the years, Navy and Air Force have a much more lucrative and attractive college option for high-level athletes. Army kind of has to, you know, if you make it into West Point, you're a fine young man, but you're probably not a high-level D1 football prospect. But I'm going to go against my gut. I know Navy's going to win the damn game for like the eighth or ninth year in a row or something crazy like that. But I would not be able to end this podcast without saying, go Army, beat Navy. I'll be rooting for Army this Saturday.
Nice, nice. All right, man. Well, I guess we'll touch base in a couple of weeks here before the Final Four kicks in for the next episode then. But, yeah, so we'll go Army on that one, and we'll sign off for there. So, for TJ and Todd's tailgate, I'm TJ. Todd is always on the phone. Todd, as always, thank you very much for coming on.
Hey, thanks.
Thank you for downloading this week's episode of Todd's Tailgate. For more information on the show, go to PlaceToBeNation.com, or you can follow the show on Twitter, @TJMasterman, or @TJMasterman.